hello. You are listening to the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb. And of course, that's 97.2 FM. And maybe some of you are listening online as well. Well, it's so lovely when we come to December because not only do we get to talk about food, but it's all the trimmings, I think, isn't it? It's the cheese, it's the chocolate, it's the wines, and it's maybe tempting you to try things that you wouldn't normally. This is treat time. And I am so pleased that we've got Louise Oliver from Seven Cellars in Brighton with us now to tempt us with hopefully some little treats for Christmas. Louise, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much.
So Louise, I love now this wonderful spread that you have in front of us here because we've got everything from wines to beers to whiskies. But Louise, one of the things that is amazing, there were some statistics brought out to say that really here in the UK, we play safe. We go looking at a label and we either look for Pinot Grigio, the biggest seller in white wine. Then we've got Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc coming up then in the ranks, but Pinot Grigio is number one. But no, and it's about a fear factor of trying something different. And also over 50% of people when interviewed, over 2,000 people were interviewed, didn't actually know much about grapes or how wine was made. And in the reds, people were safer going for, you know, there's a Merlot, a Malbec or a Spanish Rioja. And that's all people look for on the label to play safe, either in eating out or buying in a supermarket. So that's why it's so great to have you here as an independent, you know, wine expert to introduce us to some new things, particularly at Christmas and New Year when it's we want something exciting. So what are we going to start with today?
Today we're going to start with one of my favourite wines in the shop. It's Lambrusco.
So really?
Yes.
One of your favourite wines is a Lambrusco.
It is one of my favourite wines. I absolutely love it. And it's particularly festive. Lambrusco is the name of the grape. It's a red grape. And it's grown in a region called Lazio, which is where this is all grown, and in Italy. It's a red sparkling wine. And it's so popular in Italy with the Italians because it's such a flexible wine. Mm-hmm. It goes with canapes. You could have it. You could pair it with any Italian food like spaghetti bolognese or just general canapes and starters and that sort of thing. It's really a delicious, delicious wine, and it's different and it's fun. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's not Christmas without having some Lambrusco. It really isn't.
I'm so keen to try it. So we're going to have a little taste now of it because I have last year, actually, funny enough, I did go for a sparkling red just to try
to be
a little bit different. And I really, really enjoyed it. Thank you very much. And it came as a recommendation. So I was so pleased. And what I also like as well, too, is that it's not a new world wine. You're sticking with it coming from Italy. So we're not going to be overpowering. So what sort of percent is in this Lambrusco?
This is 12.5%.
Okay.
So it's a good party wine.
Yeah, it is.
It's also natural and biodynamic. I don't know if you know what that means.
Yes.
But it's organic and it's made naturally. So that means the winemaker hasn't added lots of, you know, wine packet yeast. It's all of the fermentation has happened spontaneously. The growing, the biodynamic movement was really formed by a guy called Rudolf Steiner. If you've ever heard of the Steiner School movement,
yes,
it's the same chap.
Really? What a clever man.
Yeah, exactly. So he designed a series of techniques for the vineyard, and it starts with the growing and the planting. So if you want to use any fertilizers, he prescribes a particular set of ways of getting the fertilizer. You bury a cow horn full of manure and things for a long time, and then you use that on the grapes. You will use chickens, and you will have they will peck at the grubs around. And the whole idea is that the vineyard is part of the universe. And so you don't necessarily have any vehicles on site which have got fuel, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's all electric vehicles, that sort of thing. And it's really a very careful way of making grapes. And so consequently, lots of the wines are particularly good because it's taken such care and attention in every stage of the process.
It's like everything in life, isn't it? They say if it's the preparation, like painting and decorating, get the preparation right,
yes,
you know,
yes.
And it makes life easier. But we're talking about flavour and taste. So it's fizzing up beautifully in the glass, and it is that ruby red colour as well too. And we're going to give a little...
So lots of dark fruits, black currant, black cherry, little slightly sort of sour black cherry on the palate. It's really nice. A lot of length on the
There's a lot of length on the palate.
That,
and for anyone,
just keeps going and going.
What
and going.
Is length on the palate? It's just you keep getting those flavours, and there's a lasting note, which is the black sort of currant or black fruit or something.
Yeah, black cherry. I really
you're absolutely right, coming through at the end. Mm. I get a sense of joy when that happens, because when people say, oh, that's a load of nonsense talking about that. But actually, when you have something that's good, you do.
You really keeps going, don't you? Yes.
You just need to take the time and savour what you're drinking. You know, just enjoy. You know, and not like me, drink and talk at the same time. Just enjoy the moment,
which is lovely. The great thing about using a local wine merchant, it does help you to choose different wines and be a bit more daring. You know, which person, not a lot of people know about Lambrusco. They might get confused with the big brand Lambrini, and it's absolutely not that at all.
Good you said that, because I think that's where we do get confused with that.
Yes. There's no shame in being confused. There's no shame in asking for something or not knowing. Mm. No, any wine merchant in the city will be able to look after you and advise you on trying different wines. Mm. If you like Pinot Grigio, what can I have instead of that? And you'll get someone to tell you, well, why don't you try this? Why don't you try that? There's lots of different...
That's what we want, isn't it?
Exactly.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
So if we are having this, where you could just have this as people are arriving as an aperitif, but paired with food, what is it going to go with everything we have on the table?
I don't think it would go with everything, but it's particularly good with things like charcuterie or those, you know, lovely roasted vegetables. You know, you get in Italian restaurants or something, you might have a cold plate of...
Gorgeous.
Roasted vegetables, something like artichoke hearts in oil, that sort of thing. Mm. It really will pick out those flavours and match brilliantly with it.
Lovely. So I think that's great. So you can have that. And sometimes over the festive time, it's just lovely, isn't it? Having family or friends around, and you have the cheese board, you have your cold meats, whatever. And it's the cold turkey afterwards. I always think it's better, isn't it?
You know,
when you have it afterwards.
Always better the next day.
And you're just more relaxed as well, too. And you can just nibble and chat and chill. It's just a lovely thing. So this is a sparkling red.
Yes, naturally sparkling red.
Naturally sparkling. Sparkling. It is sparkling. Lambrusco from Italy. And what sort of price are we looking at here?
This is about £17.50.
Okay, well worth it to me. I think it's just delicious, really lovely. And remember, this is Christmas, New Year, so why not have something a little bit special on your table, which is lovely. So sparkling red, love it, love it, love it. Now, you've also got a white. So, of course, people are thinking, well, I kind of go with, I like a Pinot or I like a Sauvignon. Do you ever notice people are very clear about which they prefer? The Pinot... Chardonnay or the Sauvignon Blanc, but it goes beyond that, Louise.
It does, absolutely. You need to challenge yourself, you need to challenge your palate, because there's no point in closing your mind. There are thousands and thousands of grape varieties, and if you come into a local wine merchant, they will help you. If you like one style of wine, you might be surprised, or if you don't like one style of wine, I mean, we get lots of people saying how much they hate Chardonnay.
Yes.
And
Chardonnay is like Marmite.
It's the ABC, anything but Chardonnay. And but Chardonnay is in Champagne. It's the main grape variety for Chablis. And these people that it's just, you know, there's nothing wrong in saying I hate Chardonnay. There's certain styles of Chardonnay which people really don't like. That, you know, the 1980s Australian woody Chardonnay, which is all but vanished now. We don't really have that sort of wine anymore. But if you think about how champagne has Chardonnay in it, it's a main component of some of the most elegant wines in the world. Perhaps it's time to think again and revisit it.
So it's really thinking about what is that saying on the palate. So people will often read a label and, you know, just think about you're looking for dry or sweet, fruity, floral. These are the sort of terms that you get to know and think, well, I like something sweeter or something drier, isn't it? You've brought a white for us.
Yes, I have. Now, the reason I bought this wine is because it says a Puy Fumé on the label. And I'm afraid to say that the French wine system is quite complicated to understand. And they don't often, although they are doing more of this, but they don't often put the grape on the label. They put Puy Fumé, which is found in the Loire Valley in France. And actually, the wine inside this bottle is Sauvignon Blanc. So if you see a wine that says Puy Fumé, you know, you don't know what it is and you don't want to risk £17.50 on it. And I can understand why that's a lot of money to risk if you don't know if you're going to like it. And this is, again, it's about £17.50. But this is Sauvignon Blanc. If you're into New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, as lots of people are, you might want to just try this because it's so elegant, and it's like the wine that New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc wanted to be when they first came out with Sauvignon Blanc. And actually, over the years, I think New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc has become really a very different beast to how it started. It's very strong, and it's very a strong tasting wine. And whilst lots of people love that, some people aren't so keen on it and they think, it's a bit strong tasting. Well, try this. It's so elegant and so refined and really worth having a look at, have a revisit.
So it is really a Sauvignon Blanc.
It is 100%.
However, it's Puy Fumé.
Yes.
So what does that mean?
Well, this means it's the region that it's from, and it's an appellation in the Loire Valley. And it comes from a specific place.
Because it is actually one of my favourite styles. I really love it. Yeah, really love it.
Okay, that's good to know.
And so I really think that's going to be a winner. So fantastic. So a nice alternative. Remember, it's about treating yourself. And we have Louise Oliver here with me on the Food and Drink Show. We're getting festive. So we've had a surprising sparkling red. Then we've been introduced to a white. Remember, if you like Sauvignon Blanc, you're going to be really surprised and delighted by this Puy Fumé. And now we're going to have, well, you've got to have a red at Christmas. You have to have a red at Christmas. So you've brought something what you believe is really special, Louise.
It is special. It's from the Black Stallion Winery in the Napa Valley. And I bought this specifically because I thought it would go brilliantly with Christmas dinner. Now, I was a bit naughty, and I did choose a wine that's quite expensive.
But we deserve a treat.
Yeah,
we all deserve a treat
at Christmas. This is around about £35 on the shelf, and it's absolutely stunning. It's a Cabernet Sauvignon, which is one of my favourite grape varieties. It's very dark fruits, beautiful, with a real kind of bit of... there's a customer that called it a little bit of spite in there.
So
It doesn't give over too easy. It's not too fruity, not too juicy, not too like some of Ribena. It's not like that. Yeah. It doesn't give itself over too easy. It makes you... I don't know. It kind of... You have to really kind of get into it.
Because a lot of people now are thinking, I think a mature drinker of red wine will sort of steer towards a Malbec So yes, we're talking a weighty wine. Where would it be on the scale of that?
It's very full-bodied, so it's very similar, yeah, and would go brilliantly with any roast dinner. Lots of those powerful flavours will stand up well against it. You know, you've got the Christmas dinner and there's lots and lots and lots of different flavours going on that plate. So I chose it specifically to go with Christmas dinner.
Fantastic. Well, and the whole thing is just to savour it. So you can have, you know, cheaper wines and, you know, if you're going to your supermarket and everything, but if you just think I'm going to sit down and savour something as a little treat. Also, I'm thinking about as a gift, because my brother will enjoy a glass of red wine and, you know, he just enjoys one or two. But I think he would really, really appreciate that. And for somebody who has everything, you know, what do you buy somebody who can, you know, just go and buy anything themselves? But it's these sort of things. It's good chocolate, it's good wine, good cheese. You know, you can't go wrong with that. So this is the Black Stallion Estate Winery from the Napa Valley. Gorgeous. A Cabernet Sauvignon. Lovely. Okay, that is really good. And you can get that, everything we're talking about today, you can get from Louise at Seven Cellars, at Seven Dials. And we're going to now, before we go on to some other drinks, you have opened at Brighton train station.
I have.
Listeners, if you have been running to get the train, coffee in hand, and you did a double take and you thought, yoo-hoo, I can now go and buy some drinks to take after I finish work. So how is it going for you?
Well, it's going really, really well. We opened at the end of October and we've been so welcomed. It's been fantastic. I worked with lots of local people to get the shop open. We worked with Chloe Bullock at Materialise Interiors. She's a local lady from Hanover and she helped me to design the space because it's a very small little shop in the old Cards Galore unit. And she has done just such a fantastic job there, you know, utilising every single inch of the place to make sure that there's enough of a choice for people, because that's what you want when you go into a wine shop. You want choice. So we've got lots and lots of spirits there. That's actually our top seller at the station, which is really interesting. Mm. The range of spirits is brilliant. We've got around about 200 there. Wow. In that space. And also we've got beers there. So for your train beers, if you're going somewhere, if you're going on a train, you're going up to London or you're heading somewhere else, you can pick up a nice beer there. We've got lots of wines, obviously, and lots of ready-to-drink things. So Brighton gin and tonic.
Oh, don't you love the... I mean, I know so they sponsor the programme. These tins, listeners, the tins are amazing, okay? They are just so delicious.
They
far, you know, surpass any others on the market. I know I may be a bit biased, but I don't think so. On the palate, it's just like you've made it yourself.
Yeah,
I think it's really,
really,
really clever. So I'm glad you've got those there.
Because
there's nothing like having a little G&T and maybe, you know, some nice little crispy things and you natter and see the whole train journey off to a good start, which is great. Because some people would have said, oh my gosh, you are mad opening a new retail business.
Yes.
You know, we're still not out of COVID. Did you have any qualms at all, Louise?
I didn't have any qualms whatsoever. I really felt that it was needed, you know, if a wine shop is needed.
I don't know.
But for me, I thought it was, it's the first place, it's the last place you can buy a drink in Brighton now. And it's brilliant to be part of such a fabulous historic building. It was built in 1841. And did you know that my shop at the Dials also built in 1841?
No.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
That was meant to be.
It was totally meant to be.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What a lovely thing for you to have.
Yeah, well, it's so good. And it's been, and also, you know, it's not just commuters that come to us. There's people that live around there that are dashing through. Lots of people walk through the station on their way to somewhere else. And, you know, we're there for all sorts of reasons, not just commuters.
Oh, fantastic. That's so good.
Yeah.
Okay. Louise, absolutely fantastic. You've given us loads of things to think about. This is about treats for Christmas for yourself and for other people. You can find Louise at Seven Cellars on the Seven Dials and also at Brighton train station. It's been a delight and thank you. And we wish you all the very best for the season.
Thank you very much.
I'm now glowing.
Me
I'm glowing.
Too.
I'm glowing, listeners.
My face is bright red.
It's lovely. I have to remember that this is a working day. Oh, I love this kind of radio whenever we get to taste lovely things. So thank you so much for bringing this selection. So Louise Oliver from Seven Cellars here on the Food and Drink Show with myself, Karen Morton. It is our seasonal delight, the December show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Hi, it's Karen Morton here from the Food and Drink Show. Welcome to our seasonal show, and it is very festive. I've been enjoying wines and my face is glowing. So what could follow that? Well, it's either going to be cheese or chocolate. Well, I'm first of all going to do it a bit of the continental style. We're going to go sweet before we go cheese. And I have George Willicombe here from the Brighton Cocoa Company, and you have you've grown from strength to strength since we met earlier in the year. And for Christmas, you brought out a range of new products, George. So tell us what you have been creating.
So we've actually just brought out our advent calendars, but obviously they... And we now just launched some new chocolate bars as well. Obviously, we teamed up with Brighton Gin, so we made our gin truffles.
Great. Have they been a big success?
Oh, they've been huge. Yeah. So we started off with just doing a little collaboration with Brighton Gin. We then got in there with the i360.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because obviously they work quite closely with Brighton Gin. And we've done some gin and chocolate tastings up at the i360. So, and it's just such a popular chocolate. So.
Okay, open the bag. You've got the bag closed, George. We just got to try this. Whatever we're thinking about... I mean, some people may try at Christmas time as well, making truffles at home, you know, as gifts. And it's a fun thing to try rolling out, you know, and the Christmas music playing. But what is the secret there, you know, for you in getting the balance right with chocolate and not being too overpowering? See, I don't like liqueurs, chocolates.
Yeah.
If I got those for Christmas, you would not. I would
not
be happy.
Fan.
But it's different when there's a truffle, and I think it's about being subtle for me, anyway. So tell us what your secret is for making a good truffle.
So, what I do is we get a lot of single origin chocolate, so it all comes from different areas, and so this particular chocolate is from Ghana. It's quite sweet, quite fruity. A little bit citrusy. So we also use it in our orange and lime chocolate bar.
Oh, it's so good, that chocolate bar.
Yeah, it's nice.
The
isn't
orange
it?
And lime. Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah. So what I did is I then take a certain product, say gin, and I go, okay, how can I pair these chocolates? So I would try it with the different chocolates. So for instance, we got one that's from Ecuador, but the actual flavour is quite sort of smoky, it's more of a whiskey sort of flavour. It's quite like rich in cocoa. So when you try and pair it with gin, it doesn't work. This is something that we did in the i360 when I did the tasting. Mm. I made two chocolates with Ecuador chocolate, and then I made, so one was gin, one was rum, and I did two with the Ghanaian, and I obviously did the gin and the rum again, just to show people how it doesn't pair well. And so then what I did is I try and bring out the flavour of the gin and the chocolate. And so I infuse the cream with orange and lime and thyme and let that infuse for about 20 minutes. And then that just brings out the flavour, the citrus flavour from the Ghanaian chocolate. And then it also brings out the flavour of the gin.
So thyme going in there.
Yeah.
Now, while you've been talking, I've been eating. And you definitely know that there's the alcohol in here, and it is that beautiful balance.
Yeah.
With the smoothness of the truffle and the chocolate. It is really delightful. And also what makes it festive is you've kind of got a shiny, it's as if it'd been dusted with fairy dust.
Yeah,
so was that purpose, you know, for Christmas?
Yeah, so I just when I was making the gin chocolates, I wanted it to be sort of like a standout chocolate. You know, it was just it was a bit of more of a special product. You know, and I just thought, well, it just needs a little bit extra, a little bit more Brighton. So I just shimmered it up a little bit.
Oh, it's so lovely. And you've got a really funky Brighton label.
Yeah.
I mean, it's delicious. And I've got this fairy dust on my fingers now from eating it. And I have to say that I have tasted your Brighton gin truffles before, because I went away for a pre-Christmas weekend with some friends. So after the meal, I gave everybody one of these truffles to try. Nice. But I just had to have you open it so I could try one again. It's so good. Now, also, this makes a really lovely gift because price-wise, it's really within budget. So tell everyone what the price is for the bag of truffles.
So the bag of truffles is £4.50. And they're all so handmade in our shop in Portland Road.
It is so good.
Yeah, loads of gin as well.
Honestly, you really do. And it's not sickeningly sweet or overpowering that some liqueur chocolates have. This is delicious. Absolutely delicious.
I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. You kind of, because when you're a chef or a pastry chef, you add a lot of alcohol to products. But it's more to just lift the flavour up. You don't want to just overpower it. And that's what I try to do. I mean, there is a lot of gin in there, but when you actually work it out per truffle, it's just a really nice, you know,
and that's the secret. And George can't tell anyone, so you can't make these at home, okay? That's the secret ingredient. At £4.95 a bag, honestly, it's just fantastic, and the flavour is great. And of course, George, we had a wonderful show with you a few months ago, and you gave us a taste test. And we were talking about your journey and, you know, having been a chef, this is so lovely because you really, truly understand about flavours and this mixing. And I love what you said about the I360 in showing people, OK, why it is so important to get the right chocolate as your base and how it can go wrong if you mix it. And that's the whole thing, isn't it? We need to taste a variety of things to go, oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we wouldn't really understand.
And I think that's slightly where I may have gone wrong, because obviously I, as a chef, that's what we used to, you know, and it's, you know, it's just a, you know, we come in the morning, that's what we do. But a lot of people don't see the kind of behind the scenes. That's what I tried to do at the shop, where you can have people come in and actually look through. People come and do a chocolate tasting. They can do their own classes. And I can then show them, this is why we use this chocolate. So, you know, I've brought in some other chocolate bars here. Each chocolate is from a different country.
Now, tell us more about these, because there's some exciting new chocolate bars. And what I love about your chocolate bars, you have, there's retail outlets like the Flower Plot Bakery and other independent traders have your chocolate, but you can also buy it from you at your shop on Portland Road. But it's sort of that lovely, there's leaves, you feel you're in a tropical rainforest, and each one you've taken the leaves and you've made a different colour per bar, and it's beautiful. So it feels like a gift when you get them. So what flavours have you got now added to the range?
So I've got a dark chocolate Moroccan mint, and this chocolate is from the Peruvian rainforest. So it's really, really difficult to get hold of, this chocolate. It is a very expensive chocolate to get in.
So this is the luxury coming in for this time of year then.
It was just one of these, I just had to try it, you know, because it's one of those, there's certain places where it's really difficult to ship things. So Madagascar, for instance, that's why vanilla is so expensive.
Is that right?
Yeah, because they've got such a short runway. It's so difficult to get cargo.
For goodness sake.
Yeah.
Never knew that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is, and so Madagascan chocolate, wow, is really expensive because it's so difficult to get it off the island. You know, and if you were to actually look up flights to try and get to Madagascar, you have to go so many different places and it's a bit crazy.
You see, this is the thing we don't understand quite often about our food sourcing. And when we know this, it helps us to appreciate what we eat all the more.
Exactly, yeah. And I like that the chocolate has, you know, has a little bit of history behind it, has a story to, you know. So we've got a dark chocolate, chili and lime, and this chocolate's from Mexico. Now, it's naturally quite spicy, the chocolate, slightly fruity as well, a little bit citrusy. So when you pair it with the chili and lime, it works really well. With the Moroccan mint, it's got sort of deep, rich cocoa taste, but if you were to pair that with the chili, it just wouldn't work. And if you were to pair the Mexican chocolate with the mint, it just wouldn't work. You know, so it's nice. So when you do these, you know, obviously we pair a lot of our chocolate with, that's sort of what we do. But it's to lift that flavour of the chocolate. You know, it just accompanies it.
Wow, so beautiful. And now, what else have you got there? So we're moving along.
So I've also got milk chocolate coffee.
Oh,
this is good. So this one I've been waiting about a year or two to make.
Okay, can you break that one
open?
Yeah,
let's do it.
We've got to break that open. I am Lady Coffee. Well. Batch one.
This is the first bar. I saved it for this
The first bar we're
event.
Trying here on the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb. Okay, you've heard this now. George Willicombe from the Brighton Cocoa Company. And we're just about to have this taste. And of course, we have got our very own green room here because we're piloting doing the radio show with having a sort of other food producers in the area. I'm hopping in and out of the studio. So you're going to have to try that. Give everybody a little bit of this to try.
So do you, you know, obviously the Flowerpot Bakery.
Yeah.
So they've just opened a roastery called the Milk Shed.
I saw that.
So they've opened that recently. And the reason I was waiting so long for this, obviously I used to work for them. And so I always said to Ollie that I'd always make him a coffee chocolate bar. But what I wanted to do is grind the cocoa nibs with the coffee beans to get a more natural coffee flavour. So you get that sort of like nice small hit of the coffee. And that's because we've got a stone grinder. And what you do is you add some cocoa butter and then the cocoa nibs. And you have to grind it for about an hour or so until it won't be smooth, but it'll be moving. And then you add all the coffee. And then every hour or so, you just keep tightening it and tightening it. And then you have to leave it overnight. So I actually just put a batch on again.
Oh.
And it's been on for about 12 hours, 15 hours.
Really?
Yeah. And it just grinds it into like a really nice smooth paste. And then we add that into that's our chocolate bar.
It is so subtle. It is so subtle. And actually, don't put your chocolate bar in the fridge. Keep it out.
Yeah, no.
Because otherwise you're not going to get the taste. And it's interesting that you've chosen milk chocolate and not a dark chocolate. So therefore, you have got that really creamy taste on the tongue. And there is that hint of coffee, and it's not overpowering.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the way there's the, okay, I'm going to say the name Revels, you know, and everybody would hate to get the coffee sweet in the bag. And often when coffee is used in chocolate, it you have to love coffee, otherwise you're not going to drink it or eat the chocolate. If you are not a big coffee person, you are not going to find this chocolate bar offensive.
That's
very elegant.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's a really nice, it's smooth, it's creamy.
Congratulations. Honestly, it is really delicious. You just, again, you have to savour it. And you're going, I get the coffee in there. But it's not overpowering. So well done you. And I love the story behind that, which is great.
So it's
delicious.
Nice.
Yeah. And we've tried it here. It's batch one on the Food and Drink Show. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
That is brilliant. And just very quickly tell us about the other two bars that you have that are looking very pretty. We're in the pink.
So this is, I just thought I'd bring our other two most popular bars. These are I think this, the pink peppercorn bar, I think you may have heard
it.
Yeah.
I love that chocolate.
I think this is the chocolate that kind of set up the company. You know, it was just, this is kind of the chocolate bar that we're about. It's really unusual. It's different. I've personally never seen a chocolate flavour like it.
So delicious.
And what I like about cooking is I want people to love things or hate it. And this very much is our Marmite. You know, people really love it or they really hate it. And I don't want people to be in the middle because it doesn't create any discussion.
No.
If it's like, oh, it's okay, that's fine. But what I really like about this chocolate is it creates, you know, we're doing the Brighton Christmas Festival at the moment, and you see husbands and wife like battling over it, going, oh, I hate it. And you're like, they're going, well, I really like it. You know, and it's.
Oh, I loved it from the first bite. That is my chocolate bar.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And that's the thing. And it's, I've taken it to, I give it to friends, I give it to, you know, people. Mm. And they go, oh, no, I don't like the sound of that. And I'm like, just try it. Just try it.
You have to.
And they go, oh, that's, yeah, okay. Yeah. And I'm like,
amazing.
It's just being a bit adventurous.
So, and it's one of your best sellers.
Yeah, so yeah, the pink peppercorn Himalayan salt and the caramelized white chocolate.
Everybody loves a little bit of caramel. Yeah. I think it's, is it because it's been a trend in the last couple of years, George, to have like salted caramel and everything?
Yeah, but I think we've, it definitely is part of the trend, but we do have a sweet tooth and it just hits the spot.
Now, sometimes the caramel for me, it can be too sweet. So what have you done to balance this, or have you gone with what people want in general?
I just sort of go with what people want. I do caramel truffles that aren't as sweet, but it's one of those things. If you don't have a huge sweet tooth, it's definitely not the chocolate for you. Because it is white chocolate contains a lot more sugar. And that's how we get the caramelized white chocolate, is if you place white chocolate in the oven about 90 degrees for about 4 or 5 hours, because of its higher sugar content, it starts to caramelize. So it will always naturally be sweet. And again, you know, most of the dark chocolate lovers absolutely hate it, but it's the sweet tooth lovers go crazy.
Lovely. And there are people who absolutely adore, like my nephew just loves white chocolate, so I'll always get him some white chocolate at Christmas time, whatever. So it's in the white chocolate which makes it really, I think, quite quirky and special, the fact that you've chosen the white chocolate to go with that, with the caramel. I absolutely love it. So there's really, across the range, a chocolate bar for everyone. You can order online your chocolates, pop into the shop, or you will also see your chocolate bars in the likes of the Flower Pot Bakery and a couple of other independent traders.
The i360, we're also in Health Rebels on Western Road, Brighton Flower Company, Western Road, Ginger and Dobbs in Shoreham.
We wish you a fantastic Christmas and that everything goes swimmingly for you over the season. Now I'm hoping you're going to step into the green room and help all our lovely guests to enjoy your chocolate. And there's some nice drinks out there to pair the chocolate with. So see what Louise and you can compare with your notes with. That's great. So George, welcome from the Brighton Cocoa Company here on the Food and Drink Show with myself, Karen Morton. Thank you for being with us.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. You are listening to the Food and Drink Show with myself, Karen Morton. And I am so happy that this is the December festive show, because we get to have so many treats. And it's especially nice this year because, you know, we've had COVID and we haven't been able to have any guests at all. And I'm now in a special purpose-built studio that is allowing social distancing. And we've been able to set up a green room so that food producers can meet and mingle in a safe distance and share produce. So we've had Louise Oliver from Seven Cellars introducing us to some wonderful drinks for Christmas. We've had George Willicombe from the Brighton Cocoa Company introducing us to new chocolate flavours. And the Brighton Gin Truffles, amazing. But also how he pairs the chocolate, which is so fantastic, to get the right flavours for us. Now, I thought it would be nice to introduce you to some cheese varieties. We're doing it continental style, where we've had the sweet things first, and now we're going on to the cheese. And I really had to have the cheese man in the studio. Now, you see the signs everywhere. When I walk up and down the beach, I always tap the wall as my distance that I go when I'm doing a walkie run thing. It's my kind of running. But I have to say, Tony Cowling from the cheese man. You are the cheese man.
I am the cheese man, yeah. Thank you for having me, by the way.
It's so good to have you here, you know, having eaten your cheeses and your first visit to the Food and Drink Show. Now tell me, how did you get to become the cheese man?
Well, it's a bit of inheritance, really. My father started the business 26 years ago, and he's been working with cheese most of his life. And it just became a development of the business. So he started off on his own, got too busy, and by demand needed more help. So I decided to finish my job and join him full time. And it's now gone on to the next stage. And now my son's now joined the business as well. So it is now third generation and my wife's involved. So it is still a family business. So,
how nice is that? Now, I don't think you're out with the cows and milking them and making the cheese. You've become more a specialist at knowing good cheese and making it available. So tell me how your business model works.
Yeah, so the cheese makers themselves, they do a fantastic job. And I wouldn't like to start going to make my own cheese. Mm. But we can certainly have a vessel to get their cheeses to market. And that's what we've been doing over the last 26 years. So basically concentrated on small producers and predominantly a lot of local producers through Sussex, and trying to get the smaller farms to get their cheeses to restaurants, delicatessens, farm shops, you know, all over the county.
And I think that's where you come into your own, because sometimes, you know, when you're a food producer, a bit like an artist, you're so involved in the making of your product. The marketing can be exhausting. So if you've got someone to take over that side of it, to get your produce in front of people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that really does help. Now, you're going to introduce us to some exciting cheeses for people to share over Christmas and New Year. So what have you got on this rather delicious cheese board that's in front of me that listeners can't get to see, but you can if you go along to YouTube and you'll find the Food and Drink Show. But tell us what you got.
Okay, so I've brought four different cheeses in today. We've got a couple of Sussex cheeses and then two more British cheeses. So obviously we try to focus a lot on Sussex and try to promote as many ones as we can. So we've got a lovely, for Christmas, we've got a lovely Sussex truffled brie.
Truffled brie,
yeah. So quite decadent, but it's, yeah, very nice. Just, and the Christmas time, if it's got truffles in it, then, you know, everybody likes a bit of...
And who's producing that?
This is made by Allsop and Walker, just outside Crowhurst in East Sussex. So,
really?
Yeah, so it's...
Oh, break that out. Let's get a little taste of that there. Truffle brie, never have I had that.
So, let's get a
piece. Oh, and what's lovely is that it's not just the creamy brie all the way through. You've got like a slice going through the middle.
Yeah, so it's like a truffle sandwich.
It is,
more or less. So yeah, basically they have their Sussex brie, which is very popular, and they slice it open and they mix the truffle with the cream cheese, and then they put it back together, mature it for a little bit longer, and
So you're definitely, oh my gosh, you're really getting the truffle and the cream cheese coming out, and then that creaminess off the brie.
Yeah.
And again, don't have this cheese too cold, so you're getting all those flavours that may be melting on a cracker.
Yeah.
That is so interesting. I'm so excited to see that. Really, really is good. Now, is that going to be widely available to buy, this particular truffle brie?
The truffle brie is obviously more popular at Christmas, but it is available all year round. Mm-hmm. But yes, there should be plenty of demand for it, so we should have plenty of stock. Yeah.
And you supply the retailers and independent sort of shops around Brighton and Hove, which is lovely. Now, what I'm liking about that too is that if Stilton is too strong for you as a cheese, for our listeners, this is a lovely alternative. You're getting a strength of flavour coming through and the creaminess.
Exactly.
A really nice alternative.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Like I say, and on Stilton, very popular at Christmas, but obviously there are so many alternatives, like the blue cheese we've brought here today.
Oh, okay. So a lovely, and it do you know what? The blue cheese that you have there, it looks, I know this sounds a weird word, but it looks fresh.
Yes.
It looks, it really does. The colour of it is beautiful. It's sort of a really lovely, it's like a buttermilk colour,
yeah,
buttercup colour, which is so lovely. So tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, so this is the, it's called Blue Clouds, and it's from the Balcombe Dairy, and it's produced from a single herd in at the dairy, so all come milk comes from one source, and it's based on like a Gorgonzola style, so it will get quite soft and creamy, and will start to ooze over time when it gets to the, you know, the peak of perfection.
Oh, I'm thinking fondue here, good old fashioned fondue coming in.
So it's a little bit more subtle than a Stilton. So for the people that are scared of blue cheeses, it's actually a good way to start.
Oh, break a little bit off there, and I'm going to. You've brought some nice crackers as well, too. You got cheese and crackers over the festive time, just sitting down, lounging. We've got our whiskies and our wines. Oh, heaven. So that's just, and it's. It really is. It's. Do you know what? It's the colour that's particularly appealing to me. And I think this is where I'm getting this freshness. Oh, that's very good.
It's a very good cheese. Yeah, very good cheese.
That's a very good. Now, tell me a little bit about temperature with this, because I think this is the other thing. We all keep our cheeses in the fridge just because, well, maybe sometimes it's because we've nowhere else to store things. Yeah. We don't have the outhouses that big houses would have had in the past. So what's your advice on that?
Well, with cheese, obviously with the environmental health these days, you've got to keep all foods chilled. But with cheese, it has to be served at room temperature because that's when all the flavours come out. So obviously you need to, if you're having people round, then you've got to make sure the cheese is out in plenty of time so it gets to room temperature and it's peak perfection. But for storing, best place is in the fridge. Either you can use just wrap them in cling film or even a greaseproof paper. But if you store them at the lowest part of the fridge, then it doesn't get too cold. So that's the best place to store them.
And then whenever you're going, you know, how long before we're actually serving the cheese, should we have it out? And is it the same, are all cheeses equal in that way?
No, normally you'd find the harder cheeses need to stay out a little bit longer because you need to get the core temperature back up to room temperature, and the softer cheeses a little bit less. So, yeah, it could be a couple of hours, or an hour, depending on the cheese. Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, leave it out a little bit on your cheese board, cover it up, and then it's ready to go. So if you're sitting down for your starter, you could have your cheese board out ready to go by the time you get to the cheese board.
Yes, definitely, yeah, that should all be good to go.
Perfect, that sounds great. Okay, so two cheeses down, and what's our third one on the cheese board?
Okay, so I've brought a cheddar here. It's an organic cheddar called Pitchfork from Somerset. And this actually won the, it was in the top four of the World Cheese Awards recently, a couple of years ago. So it's actually quite an award-winning cheese. It's made by the Truthuan Brothers, which also make the Gorwood Caerphilly, which is another famous cheese. So here we go.
Lovely. Okay, this is great. So we're going to give this a little nibble. There's nearly like a nutty aftertaste with the cheese, which is very lovely. How is that?
I think a lot of the, because this is a traditionally made cheddar, so it comes in the big rounds, sort of 27 kilo round cheddars, and it has the cloth wrapper around it as well. So it is traditionally made. A lot of people go to the supermarkets now are so used to having a block of cheddar. But they don't realise that normally all the traditional ones were made in circle truckles. And I think it's the way the cheeses are aged brings the profile, different profiles of the cheeses coming through. So you get the nuttiness in some of them.
Tell me the name of this again, because now you've kind of spoilt me for my bargain bag of cheddar in the fridge in the supermarket.
This is
divine.
This is called Pitchfork.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. It is a very good cheddar, yeah. And like I say, traditionally made, like you say, it was fourth in the World Cheese Awards a couple of years ago.
Well, I can see that. It is award-winning. It's delicious, so delicious. Okay, so we have a fourth cheese here. Now, this one is looking a bit like when I've stayed in the bath too long.
It is a little
bit
wrinkly. And
your skin gets all crinkly and
exactly,
wrinkly, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed.
Don't be put off, listeners.
Well, this... Yeah, this is a goat's cheese from Oxfordshire, and it's called a Cynodon Hill. And it has won some awards as well. But it has got a quite a unique look on the outside. It's the yeast on the outside of the cheese that mature, and it makes it look all wrinkly. But the inside, if I come up, the inside will be a lot fresher and whiter.
Now, there's different goat's cheese. There is the goat's cheese that is generally round, and we get it if we're going to have a starter, and there's like a, you know, a flan, or there's a goat's cheese and spinach something or whatever, which is very strong in taste and flavour. And then there's the harder goat's cheeses, which are a very different taste and consistency. So what's going on there?
Well, a lot of the a lot of people, I think, over the past have been put off by goat's cheese. I think maybe because a lot of the continental cheeses, the goat's cheeses, are quite strong and pungent and quite, how's the word put it, farmyardy. And where some of the
smelly, in other
smelly.
Words.
Smelly. But but then you can get a lot of fresher and more lactic goat's cheeses that, that do sort of taste a bit fresher on the palate. So
okay, well, this is going to be one for me to try now, because I'm not a great goat's cheese person, but yet whenever I have been abroad and I've had sort of a firmer goat's cheese away from the traditional rounds that we get, I have had, you know, they've been very delicious. So you're definitely having a goat's cheese.
Yeah.
Very subtle on the palate and very creamy.
Very creamy, yes.
Very creamy. So that would be lovely on a cracker, which is really nice. Some nice grapes or fruit on the side. And I wouldn't want to have a chutney with that, because it would be overpowering, because it's so delicate
in
flavour.
It is quite delicate, yeah. So that's what a lot of people have put off thinking.
Very nice.
Goat's cheese, I don't want to try it. But I think with any cheese, you can, a lot of people like strong cheeses, but sometimes if you have a strong cheese, you can't taste anything after it. I always think if you have a cheese, it's good if you know you're on another piece.
Yeah. Oh, it's very good. Now, you could have that as an alternative to a brie or alongside. It's in that family on the cheese board. It's very soft and subtle.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
That is a welcome surprise for me there, because I would normally go, the goat's cheese, I'll pass on that one. Very, very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like you say,
that was a lovely surprise.
People have been put off in the past. Yeah. But I think you can't always, judge a book by its cover. So always try it first.
Try it first. And it looks interesting as well, in the crinkly sort of way in the middle of the cheese board.
Exactly.
So we have got Tony Cowling, who is the cheese man, here on Radio Reverb Food and Drink Show. We've been tasting delicious cheeses. But you've also got a new venture that you have opened this year called the Cheese Hut. And I really want to know more about that. Tell us, please, Tony.
OK, the Cheese Hut came about when we had a wholesale business, and we kept having people popping around the unit asking if they can buy cheese. And being a wholesaler, we deal direct with the trade. So we couldn't, and we didn't have the space. So we moved over to a new unit on the port, and we had some space. And we said, "Well, what a place to showcase a lot of the products that we sell through the wholesale, and predominantly showcasing the Sussex cheeses, which we wanted to do." So we built a little summer house inside the unit, and we called it the Cheese Hut, and it's open to the public. Tuesday to Saturday, 10 till 4. So, and we have probably between 120 and 150 different cheeses in there at one time, and about 60 Sussex cheeses as well. So, something for everybody.
Now, what are you, in addition to what you brought us here today, I noticed that you've got a little gift goodie box there. And again, we're thinking about not only eating ourselves, but about what we can give as gifts.
Exactly, yeah. Well, like I say, in our household, the cheese, is a great gift. Mm-hmm. I think you can find something for everybody, and it's something they always remember. Mm-hmm. So, in the shop, we've got lots of cheeses. that are available, and we can make gift boxes up, and we do monthly cheese subscriptions and monthly cheese boxes of British and artisan and local cheeses that you can subscribe to.
Tony, it's been a delight to have you on the show. I look forward to going down and seeing you at the Cheese Hut. And listeners, you know, I hope that you enjoy buying cheeses that have been brought to your favourite delis and restaurants, as well as getting it direct from Tony as well too. So Tony, we wish you a very happy Christmas, and
to you.
Cheese!
Indeed, yeah, Merry Christmas and cheese.
For listeners, I hope that you have enjoyed our guests on the show today. Louise Oliver from Seven Cellars. We have the Cheese Man, otherwise known as Tony Cowling, that you've just heard. And George Willicombe from the Brighton Cocoa Company, giving us lots of treats for ourselves to serve to our guests, but also that we can give as gifts. It has been truly delightful to have everybody. We hope that you have enjoyed the Food and Drink Show here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, and you can be listening to us on DAB and online. The Food and Drink Show is sponsored by the lovely folk at Brighton Gin. And on behalf of us all, we wish you a very Merry Christmas, a healthy one, and a fabulous 2022. Take care.